Final hour, Darren Dunnick and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game on this hot Thursday here in Middle Tennessee. Darren McFarland, Willie Dunnick here with you. We say hello to our good buddy Elliot Freeman from Sportsnet, who joins us this time every Thursday. Elliot, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you guys doing today?
Well, it's 90 degrees in Nashville. What about Toronto?
Actually, I got to tell you, it's a nice day out today. I don't know if it's quite 90,
okay,
but it's really nice. I'm actually doing this. I just did a Peloton, and I'm sitting on my back deck while we do this interview. So
okay,
we can't always do that in Toronto like you guys in Nashville, so it's nice.
So you're in the cool-down period. Okay, good.
You are a true cyclist. I did my true cool-down, and now I'm really cooling down.
Awesome. I'll tell you what, Montreal cooled down Vegas a little bit last night, and boy, I thought Shea Weber was outstanding. That's the Shea we watched for a long time here in Nashville. I just thought, he proved his worth. Not that he didn't prove his worth. We all know how great he is, but Carey Price stood out, but I thought Shea Weber, number six, stood out as well.
Well, you know, the amazing thing about it with Weber is he's basically doing it looks like, with eight fingers, right? Both his thumbs appear to be hurt.
Yeah.
I don't know if you saw, but a couple weeks ago, at the end of the regular season when Weber was out, the Canadians accidentally released a photo of Weber getting vaccinated, and it showed that he was wearing a harness or something on his left thumb. And we knew he was out of the lineup at the time, and they'd shown some video of him skating with one hand and shooting left-handed, and we know he isn't left-handed. So we thought there was something wrong with the left hand, and accidentally they showed us that there was. And then in game one, he took a slash off a face-off from Ryan Reeves, and we saw him shaking his hand. Like, he went to the bench and he was shaking it. And I didn't realize at the time until someone pointed out to me the next day, it was the other hand, and it was right on the thumb. And if you saw last night, he was at the end of the game on the last shift when he was blocking some shots and generally causing havoc, he was shaking that right hand again.
Oh,
so
he was.
He's got two badly hurt thumbs. And the joke I make is, you guys know Weber, he'll just cut off the thumbs, put them in ice, and reattach them in August, right?
Yeah, so true. Elliot,
he's doing right now is amazing.
It's amazing. The story that comes to mind for me, the 2015 first round, Predators against the eventual Stanley Cup champion Blackhawks. Predators actually are a higher seed. Blackhawks, people might not remember that, but he gets his kneecap dislocated.
Yep.
It was definitely the second. And he was fully prepared. He was telling people, just, you got to figure a way. I got to get back in. The doctor's like, you cannot come back in this game.
Yeah.
He was like, I got to try.
Yeah, your kneecap came out of its socket, Shay. You cannot play.
Unfortunately, he missed the rest of the series, which was a big factor. They lost Mike Fisher in that series, too. But that's the kind of pain threshold he has.
We were talking
earlier. I think he's just determined. Like, he's one of those guys, he's like, it's just a mindset, right? And I think some of those people are borderline insane, but he just refuses to admit to defeat to anything. And I remember, I think it was last year or 2 years ago, I couldn't remember, but he was playing with an injury, and one of the other Canadians told me, you would not believe what this guy is going through to play right now. And you guys would know. I mean, you guys were just talking about it. Your fans would know, the Predators fans. They've seen this all. But I think to a lot of other people, I don't think we really understand the pain threshold or the sheer will. It's like he refuses to admit defeat to anything. It's really quite amazing.
We were talking earlier, Elliot, now it shifts back to Montreal. We know at the very end they were the first one to get in Canada, first ones to get people in the building. I think it's at 2,500. Yep. Have they announced what they're going to allow for game three?
3,500 for the next two games.
3,500. Okay. So that's.
Yeah.
Well, that's. Yeah. It's something, but man, it's too bad because, you guys, you know the atmosphere, what that would be like in a sold out barn.
Oh, yeah.
It would have been very dip. So you have to give advantage Vegas because of that, right? Or no?
Well, I think the one thing is that Montreal's gotten used to it, so I don't think it'll bother them anymore. You know, one of the big storylines we were wondering coming into the series was how would Montreal react to its first full house of the year? And I thought they handled it pretty well. I thought they came out in game one. They were the better team in the first game. And then, you know, they ran into penalty trouble and Vegas overwhelmed them. Last night, again, I thought they were the better team to start. They actually had the building really quiet as we've heard it for the playoffs. And then Petrangelo made it 3-1, and there was a big skirmish at the end of the second period. And Vegas really feeds on that. And you know, as we saw, Montreal kind of held on for dear life in the third period. But now the thing is going to be like, I think we're going to be talking about this tomorrow for Game 3. How's Vegas going to handle, like, its first real nothing crowd of the playoffs?
Yeah,
like, it's going to be... It's going to be interesting. You know, about the whole non-crowd thing, it's funny. My buddies who are Toronto fans, they're like, I'm glad we didn't win it this year. And I'm saying to them, you know, be quiet. Like, you don't really believe that. And they're like, no, because we would have won the Stanley Cup and we wouldn't have been able to have a parade. And I'm saying to them, that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. Like, you don't really believe that.
Speaking of someone else that we got to know well in their time in Nashville, the Lightning and Islanders, that series shifts and gets underway Game 3 tonight. We got to know Barry Trotz very, very well here, and he was usually pretty cool, calm, and collected on the bench. In fact, we used to take calls, Elliot. Why doesn't Barry ever get mad? Why doesn't that coach ever get animated on the bench? And he was animated in Game 2. There was some horrible calls in that game, and boy, did he let them have it. Bruce Cassidy, I'm sure, would say, tough, deal with it. You deserve some horrible calls. But nonetheless, Barry, very animated in Game 2.
Well, I was a bit surprised because, yes, the referees did have a bad night in Game 2 of that series, but one of those calls really benefited the Islanders. Like, it's not like, you're right, they missed it too many men. There were seven guys on the ice when Tampa scored one of those goals. But don't forget, too, that Tampa had a 1-0 lead. And, you know, for those of you who didn't see the play, Varlamov, the Islander goalie, had to leave the game because Point crashed into him.
Yeah.
And Point got a penalty. And Adam Pellick, the Islanders defenseman, he was completely at fault for that. Like, that was a terrible call.
Yeah.
And it comes right after the Lightning had made it 1-0 in a series they're down. And the Islanders get a power play and they score. And so, yeah, I understand that Trotz was mad about that particular call. I get it. And the referees didn't have a great night. But he did get the benefit of a horrible call his way at a pretty critical time. And, you know, guys, the one thing I do wonder about is those referees, they go into their dressing rooms in the intermissions and they watch exactly what's being said. They know everything that's being said about there. And sometimes I wonder, you know, when Trotz complains after a night like that where he got the benefit of a really rough call, does it hurt you in the long run? I guess we're going to find out in a few hours.
Elliot, is Kucherov just going to sit out next regular season and just play in the playoffs, you think, moving forward?
Jeff and I were joking on the podcast that every year they're going to pick one member of the Lightning who has to sit out.
I heard you guys talking about this.
So they can invest. Yeah, but we said that there's no way Vasilevsky, the goalie, is going to be the one allowed to do it. You know, I think... You know, the amazing thing is that they tried to trade Johnson, and they just couldn't do it. And I think they were very close, like days away from trading Killorn. And they did not want to do that. And to be honest, guys, I think it's possible he was coming to Nashville. I think he was a guy that you guys had on you. And you guys took a long time to make moves last year. And I think one of the reasons was, I think you guys were one of the teams that he might have ended up with. And they did not want to do that. And it saved Killorn there for the season. And you see how important a player he is for them. I think at some point in time they're going to have a reckoning here. And I know everybody is complaining about this. I don't have a problem with it. Chicago did it to win the Stanley Cup in the year you guys just mentioned, 2015. If they really wanted to clear up that loophole, they could have done it 6 years ago. They didn't. And the other thing, too, and I know this might not be the most popular take I've ever come up with, I think it's not a bad thing if some of the fans just hate some of the teams in this league. Like, I know that everybody hates Toronto. Like, hate's good. You know, like, you know, everybody hates the Yankees. You know, either love them or you really hate them, and they're a draw because of it. The Red Sox have become that team. The Dallas Cowboys have been that team for a long time. Like, excuse me, if fans are really riled up about Lightning and that, I think that's good. Like, I saw that exchange the Predators had on social media with the Golden Knights. Like, when the Golden Knights said, you know, is there a banner for this? And you guys, your social media team, which I thought was really funny, put one up that says, this is why no one likes you.
Right.
Like, that's true. Like, there's teams that hate the Golden Knights because they don't think an expansion team should be this successful this quickly. Guys, I think that hate is great. We need people that are villains. You cannot have heroes without villains, and I think this is good for interest in the sport.
Interesting. We've tried to, and we're just literally trying to read into every little thing on what does that mean for Pacarine moving forward. Have you heard anything on that front? Do you have any gut feeling, or have you talked to anybody that you think Pekka's leaning one way or the other? Like, we believe on this show that it's either going to be here as the backup next season, mm-hmm. or he's going back to Finland and playing there mm-hmm. to finish out his career. Like, we don't believe he's going to play for another team. Mm-hmm. So are you hearing anything on that front at all?
Well, the one thing I did hear was when Rask came out and said that if he comes back, he's playing in Boston. And if he comes back, he needs surgery and he won't be able to play until probably January or February. What I heard was the Bruins told him, Tuukka, you've earned the right to take your time and we don't want you to make an emotional decision. The only thing we need to know is we need to know well before, you know, free agency so we can start making our plans. And I think I kind of heard that was similar to what you guys and Renee were talking about, was that you've earned the right to make your decision. And, you know, I think you guys will keep it tight as an organization, because I think the Predators / Renee want to make the announcement their way. So information, I think, is very tight. But the only thing that someone told me was that it was similar with Renee, like, you've earned the right to think about it. Just make sure we have plenty of time to know one way or the other.
Elliot Friedman is with us. We're talking hockey with him. Elliot, you've been hinting the last couple of weeks that this was going to get done. Rod Brind'Amour now makes it official. He's staying with the Hurricanes. One thing you mentioned was he was trying to leverage his power, basically, to get better deals for his assistants. Did he succeed in that?
I believe that it was not only assistants, it was the goalie coach and the training staff and the equipment staff, too. All of their contracts were up. And I believe that happened in every case so far except one, and that's the assistant coach who has permission to talk to other teams, Dean Chenoweth, who runs their defense and their penalty kill. So as far as I know, it's everybody minus him.
One of the things that I heard you guys discussing on your podcast was the aftermath of Colorado, right? Nathan MacKinnon
yep.
and his emotional thing, we haven't won anything, you know, I thought we were going to win it. So Nashville, it's unique. You know, you lose these juggernauts that are leaving, Carolina and Tampa Bay, competing for the President's Trophy. They're gone, and now
yep.
you get Colorado coming back in. They're going to be an angry, hungry team next year. But you were talking about they've got some tough decisions to make with their cap. Tell people about that, because we're going to get very familiar with them again next year.
Well, I think what's going to happen there is, like, they have a lot of free agents. They have Landeskog, their captain, is an unrestricted free agent. Grubauer, the starting goaltender, is an unrestricted free agent. They've got a bunch of depth forwards who are UFAs and some guys who are restricted. And that includes Cale Makar, who is a Norris Trophy finalist this year and was the only defenseman to average a point a game. And, you know, what I think is they want Landeskog to stay very badly. And he's their captain. He's been a loyal franchise player since he got there. He's a huge part of their team, and they want him to stay. But the tricky thing is Makar. Now, from what I understand, they're willing to talk long-term. Like, a lot of the top young players aren't signing for term right now because they want to wait to see the cap, how much the cap does or does not go up. And they figure if they take three-year deals now, eventually there'll be more room. Makar, I've heard, is willing to talk long-term deal, and I think the Avalanche would like to do a long-term deal, but I've heard if that's the case, the number is going to be very, very big. Hmm. And he's earned it. He deserves it. And so, you know, they've also got MacKinnon in 2 years, and that number, they know, is going to be very, very big. So your priorities are those three guys, Makar, MacKinnon, and Landeskog, but you probably can't give them all what they want. I think they really want to keep Landeskog badly. I think they think he sets the a phenomenal tone for their organization, and they want him to stay. But it's going to be tricky with the Makar, depending on how many years Makar signs for. So I think that's how it's going to work. It's going to be, what's Makar's number? How do we keep Landeskog? We've got to deal with MacKinnon in 2 years, and everything else has to work around that.
Last thing for you, I started to read some of these guys that are starting to take a crack at a mock draft for Seattle. And I saw one where there were three different people taking stabs at it. And on the one that I read in The Athletic this morning, all three guys had a different predator that they took. But it's sort of illustrated when you look at the big picture, not just the team that you're covering. Like, of course, here in Nashville, everybody's wondering who are the Predators going to lose. But you have to sort of look at it in the context of Seattle. And I saw a lot of tough decisions between a guy. You mentioned Alex Killorn. You know, Tampa is going to have to somewhere in here shed some payroll. So do you take a guy like that, or do you take more of a young up-and-coming guy who maybe you control a little longer, who's a little cheaper? There's so many tricky ones. Team by team, Seattle's got to make these choices. It sort of hit me in the face just what a big thing this is, just looking at it macro instead of micro.
Seattle, like every team in the league would say to you guys, we made the ones that we saw some of the mistakes that were made with Vegas, you know, Minnesota, Florida, and they said, we're not going to let that happen to us again. If we lose a player, we lose a player, and we're not walking ourselves into even bigger losses. And then came the pandemic and the flat cap. And now teams are looking at this like, uh-oh. You know, we got some problems here. And so Seattle is basically extorting them again. And, you know, that's the name of the game. You know, that's
right.
That's what they have to do. And, you know, so I think you're going to see, I think teams are basically asking, what's the minimal amount of damage we can do to ourselves and how to get that? And I think that's kind of where we are here. You know, I think there's a big one looming. I think the Eichel one could happen before then. Mm. We'll see how that turns out. But I think there's a lot of teams sitting there saying, oh, my God, I can't believe what Seattle's asking. You know, how do we work around this? It's going to be a big challenge because one of the things I've heard is Seattle only has to draft 60% of the cap. And I think they want to keep their flexibility. And I think they're targeting defensemen. If you look at Ron Francis's history, he built by defense in Carolina. And if you look at positions that are available, especially by free agency the next 2 years, a lot of the impact players are on the blue line. You know, this year it's Hamilton. Next year, if they don't sign, guys like Seth Jones and Colton Parayko and Darnell Nurse are unrestricted free agents. So there's a lot of good depth defensemen out there, too. So I think that's the position that's going to be key, and I think that's the position Seattle's going to target, and teams are going to have to work knowing that.
What are we, a month away from the expansion draft?
Yes. I think it's June
21st.
The draft is the 20th. Yeah, the draft is the 23rd, right? So, yeah, it's 2 days before that.
Okay.
I think the list has to be in on the 17th, if I've got that right.
Yeah, that's when Seattle gets the exclusive window. They get 3 days of an exclusive window to talk to people.
So we are a month out from that date. So exactly a month out. Okay. We shall see. Elliot, good workout, good interview. Great job, as always.
Thanks, guys.
Good job on the back deck. Way to go.
Thanks very much, guys. I hope you heard the birds chirping. I hope that added
it
something.
It was. It did Perfect. Add something. Yeah, it was nice. Elliot Friedman.
I assume they were Blue Jays, I guess.
I think it was a zen interview, you know, hearing the birds. It was nice.
Right.
Very nice.
They're just like the Blue Jays. They do everything great for seven innings, and the last two just doesn't work.
Wow.
They're getting better, though.
Elliot Friedman, everybody, from Sportsnet and 31 Thoughts. Good stuff from him. As always, Willie, we'll come back and discuss that Athletic article that you just referenced. And we will do that on the other side. But first, I'm going to talk to you about, you know, that golf major, you know, the third major of the year that's coming up this weekend. And DraftKings, America's top-rated sportsbook app, is giving you a shot to land one on the green. It's something I strive for when I play golf. It happens every once in a while. But you know what? The pros, these guys, this weekend, they're going to be hitting the green a lot. And this week, DraftKings has given you 100-1 odds on Bryson DeChambeau to sink at least one birdie this weekend. Now, if this was me, if I had to sink a birdie, you're in trouble. But for Bryson DeChambeau, this is a really, really good bet that you should jump on. If you haven't tried DraftKings Sportsbook, this is the time. That's 100-1 odds on Bryson DeChambeau hitting a birdie during the tournament. That's 100-1 odds. On an offer like this, it doesn't come around very often. So get in there, sign up right now, download the top-rated DraftKings Sportsbook app, and use the code 1025GAME. When you sign up, turn $1 into $100 in free credits if DeChambeau sinks a birdie this weekend. Use that code again, 1025GAME, to turn $1 into $100 in free credits for a limited time only at DraftKings Sportsbook. You must be 21 years of age or older. Tennessee only. Restrictions do apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call or text the Tennessee Red Line, 1-800-889-9789.